for Your Situational Awareness, an Air Force podcast amplifying the voices of people who fuel the world's greatest Air Force.
And so we need to have that diversity of thought.
Making sure that our airmen are taken care of, they're being heard.
A military podcast.
That is a hard question.
On another level.
We're not often asked why something means something to us personally.
My mantra is one team, one fight.
From Air Force Production, this is FYSA.
What's up? Welcome to the show. I'm Angela Orozco. Today on FYSA, an Air Force podcast, we discuss the value of diversity in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM, in the Air Force.
So today, as we work to build enduring advantages for our brave men and women in uniform, we must seek the latest innovations in science and in engineering. And that means building more bridges to America's outstanding STEM community.
This is Secretary of Defense Lloyd J. Austin III from a ceremony at Howard University, the first historically black college or university to be selected by the Air Force to lead a university-affiliated research center for the service.
We need your ideas. We need your creativity, and we need to draw on the skills of all of our people.
The partnership with Howard University will be focused on tactical autonomy technology for military systems. Howard, the HBCU, will receive $12 million a year for 5 years to help fund research faculty and students. The investment in partners like Howard University is just one way that the Air Force is harnessing the power of diversity in order to compete globally. Project Tuskegee is an outreach program sponsored by Air Force Global Strike Command.
And essentially what it is, it's an opportunity to allow striker airmen, those individuals who are part of Air Force Global Strike Command, to reach out and engage those who are in underrepresented communities.
This is Lieutenant Colonel Craig Dorn, commander of Headquarters Squadron for Air Force Global Strike Command, which means he's essentially the squadron commander for the headquarters staff.
There are only two individuals on G-Series orders. That is the commander of Air Force Global Strike, General Boussier, and then myself within the headquarters. So I essentially handle all the administrative issues, non-judicial punishment, facilities and management, readiness, all those type of things that a normal squadron commander would take care of within a normal squadron, but do it for a staff that's approximately about 1,300 people.
Lieutenant Colonel Dorn is also the lead project officer for Project Tuskegee, a position he was handpicked for by former Global Strike Commander General Anthony Cotton. Dorn had previously served under General Cotton at Air University, where he was his A1 and section commander.
He looked to me and said, hey, you know, I want him to do this. And, you know, how do you tell, you know, a brand new four-star of a major command no? So I was like, copy that, sir. We'll figure out how to make this go and meet your intents. And off we went.
Yeah, so let's get into this project Tuskegee a little bit more. I love what it stands for. I was raised in an underserved community, and I can see the value of something like this. So why don't you just describe what Project Tuskegee is?
A lot of times, in many instances, around our Air Force bases and installations, there is a connection with the community, but sometimes, depending upon the demographics of the community, they may not feel included and or reached out to. So we wanted to establish something that was definitely going to reach out to those who, one, probably don't have normal access to a base. Two, when we do community outreach events, air shows and those type of things, they're probably still not coming to the base to see what the Air Force and what that particular base is about. So we wanted to create something that would definitely, we were stepping to where they were. And inviting them and being, you know, directive and engaging so that we could reach those who normally wouldn't be reached. Because I liken it to the example that I, you know, talked about when we first kicked off Project Tuskegee. In many instances at Barksdale Air Force Base, on the other side of the Red River is Shreveport, Louisiana. Within Shreveport, there's a large demographic of African-Americans. And in many instances, when those African-Americans see the B-52 coming across the sky, their first notion isn't to think that there may be someone who looks like them or someone from the same background as them that are flying the plane or even on the plane. So we wanted to kind of break that stereotype to let them know that, again, that is an opportunity for you to not only fly the plane, be in the plane, or whatever you want to do within not only Air Force Global Strike Command, but within the Air Force as well.
I think that's important because I've never lived around a base where I've thought, I am welcome to come onto that base, you know?
We kind of pass around the saying of, again, you can't be it unless you see it. So if I can see somebody that looks like me, if I can see someone who has my particular background, then I too can believe that I can be what they are because they come from exactly where I come from.
That's Lieutenant Colonel Craig Dorn, lead officer for Project Tuskegee. As Dorn takes the program into the future, it's important to remember how it started and who inspired it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, Angel, that I really wanted to set forth in the journey of doing Project Tuskegee, which I wanted to do while I was the commander at Air University, but I was then transitioned to Global Strike Command, and that's why I was able to do it there.
This is General Anthony J. Cotton, commander of U.S. Strategic Command.
One of the things I wanted to be able to do, and it's pretty simple, I call it exposure through opportunity through exposure. So you can go exposure through opportunity and then opportunity through exposure. 'Cause what you find is everyone doesn't start at the same place. Everyone doesn't have the same opportunities to understand what's offered by the Department of Defense, not only the Air Force, but all branches of service, but in my case, just really having folks understand what are the opportunities that you can have as an airman in our United States Air Force at the time. And how do I give them opportunities so they can be exposed to those things, right? So that's why, that's kind of the impetus of Project Tuskegee.
Really great points you bring up there. And one of the best articles I've read on AF.mil in a couple of years was your article titled Diversity, Inclusion, Are Tools for National Defense, Not Buzzwords. You wrote, as we push towards a more lethal and ready force, it's a diverse and inclusive group of airmen that will help drive that end state. How do programs like Project Tuskegee support that notion?
Well, I think it does because it opens up the horizon and opportunities again, and you'll hear that term opportunity. Yeah, I love using the quote from Hamilton, right? So my wife and I love Hamilton. So, you know, the song, you have to be in the room where it happens. So I think that's absolutely correct. Well, you have to have opportunities to actually be in the room where it happens, right? And you have to have access to understand how do you get those opportunities to be in the room where it happens. So when you're in the rooms where it happens, you give a broad sense and different opportunities and ideas to senior leaders on decision making, whether it's a female in a room, whether it's an African American in a room, whether it's someone from the Midwest in the room, or someone from the South in the room. There's always different ways of being able to approach a solution set, and by having a diverse set of folks to be able to offer input, I think is always going to be a plus rather than a negative.
We hear the phrase, representation matters, all the time. And it certainly does. It does for me anyways. Who did you have to look up to, or what inspired you to think, I can be a general in the world's greatest Air Force?
Well, first of all, I never even envisioned myself of being a general officer. So I always, when I was commissioned, I always did see myself as, man, I would love to aspire to be a colonel in the United States Air Force one day, but I never aspired to be a general officer. I'll begin there. I will tell you, and man, what an incredible blessing is. I remember I had a poster in the early 70s when I was, I think my dad was stationed at Andrews Air Force Base, and I had a poster of the Thunderbirds. And I had a signature because I saw this African-American Thunderbird pilot, and his name was Captain Fig Newton. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. Look at this guy. Never seen a African-American fighter pilot up close, and especially someone who was from a a demonstration team like Fig Newton, Captain Fig Newton at the time. Lo and behold, so Fig Newton is a true hero of mine and a true mentor. So, General Newton and I are close friends today, which is just amazing that someone who I looked up to, we're now colleagues and friends. I always have to caveat that, though, because my true hero is two people. One, obviously, is my dad, who was an Air Force Chief Master Sergeant in the United States Air Force, serving 32 years. But even I think the one who benchmarked it all for me was General Benjamin O. Davis, Jr. And being able to see him and hear him speak when I was at Squadron Officer School in 1992, and I have an autographed book from him on his autobiography. I mean, the sense I got, being in the room with him was just incredibly amazing and awe-inspiring, just being in the room with him. So those are my two, Angel, that I, actually three, that are superheroes to me, right? My dad, B.O. Davis Jr., and Fig Newton.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I mean, what are the chances from your bedroom wall to actually meeting someone and becoming a friend and having them be a mentor? I mean, what else can you ask for? And then, of course, the other two.
Yeah.
It's great when you can have a father who you look up to and is inspiring. So that's really incredible, sir.
Hey, but Angel, I think one thing that I would probably add too is, a lot of your mentors and a lot of folks that help you along the way don't necessarily have to look like you. And in my case, because there wasn't a lot that looked like me in higher levels, there were those who didn't. A dear friend, now colleague, but was my boss a couple of three times, is a man by the name of Lieutenant General, now retired, Robert Henson, who's from East Tennessee. Went to the University of Tennessee, white male, but inspired me in his own right, saw in me that I had what it took to make it in the United States Air Force, and was a true advocate of Tony Cotton. So, you can see folks that will mentor you and help you along the way in all shapes and forms and colors.
As someone who has achieved tremendous success in the Air Force, in the Department of Defense, what does it mean to know your presence or just your existence alone inspires thousands, if not millions of people, not just in our country, but around the world?
Well, Angel, I'll tell you, it's absolutely, you use the term humbling, but it is absolutely humbling. And I'll leave you with this as an example. So a dear friend of mine and colleague is the current superintendent of the Air Force Academy, Lieutenant General Rich Clark. So when we were two stars together, he was the commander of the Mighty 8th Air Force, and I was the commander of 20th Air Force, the two numbered air forces that are actually the basis of an independent Air Force today. So historic in their own right. So we were going out to lunch. I was TDY to Barksdale Air Force Base, and had lunch with him. And we went to a restaurant. We were in uniform. It's funny, the room, everyone looked at us. It was probably a 50-50 mix of African-Americans and white patrons that were in the restaurant. Someone walked up to us while we were eating, and someone actually grabbed our tab. But somebody else walked up to us while we're eating and said, "Sirs, I would have never thought I would have seen one African American major general in person. To see two, I wish my father was alive to see this." And we looked at each other, and we knew even before that time that's when you realize that you represent more than just yourself. Right. And I think, Angel, that was a perfect example of, that humbling experience of knowing that you represent more than just yourself.
That is a beautiful story, sir, and a great way to end our conversation with General Anthony J. Cotton, Commander, U.S. Strategic Command. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Angel. It was great talking with you today.
Project Tuskegee has collaborated to host events with a couple of Air Force bases and their surrounding universities and communities, including their most recent events with Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, and with Air Combat Command's 4th Fighter Wing at Seymour Johnson, Goldsboro, North Carolina. The program will soon be teaming up with Angelo State University in San Angelo, Texas, where they'll connect with an area of people who are largely Hispanic. If you're already a service member in the Air Force or Space Force and you're looking for a way to flex your intellectual muscles and have an idea that could benefit your service, then you should consider applying for an Edison Grant, which is another effort to build a pipeline of technologically proficient airmen and guardians. The grant provides personnel a year of funding for novel research experiments.
My proposal was to do a, what we call an irregularly shaped rotating detonation engine.
Joining FYSA is Kavi Muralitharan.
I'm a captain in the United States Air Force, stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio, and I'm a developmental engineer.
Captain Muralitharan goes on talking about his engine detonation project proposal that he received funding for.
So if you break it up, a rotating detonation engine, or what we call an RDE, is a high-performance pressure gain combustor or engine concept to try and improve the efficiency and work of an engine. And so historically, these have normally been annular or circular in design. We kind of build upon that. That's how turbine engines are built. That's how typical engine design has been. But if we take a step back and say, but why? You know, we look at the physics and we look at the concepts that make a detonation engine work. We want to start exploring innovative, interesting ideas to kind of improve their form factor, their efficiency, and make something that could really transform how we develop and eventually field these technologies.
The Edison Grant Program was created by the Air Force Research Laboratory and the Air Force Chief Scientist Office. In 2021, 16 grants totaling almost $800,000 were awarded to technically proficient military members like Captain Muralitharan, who was awarded the grant in 2022.
So as part of that, it was a call for proposals to the entire Department of the Air Force for airmen and guardians, enlisted and officers who are in a science or engineering related field or have a background in those in STEM. And the call for proposals is, hey, do you have an idea or something that you can experiment upon? And we want to try and get uniform personnel more involved in the science and technology that the Air Force is looking to do. So I submitted the proposal and it was awarded. And from that, I got to build and experiment my idea, work with military personnel that are senior and already have done a lot of this science and experimentation to try and get my concept going.
Captain Kavi Muralitharan says that if you have an idea that gets Edison Grant funding and has success, that idea could get propelled further than you initially thought. And if it doesn't work out, well, that's okay too.
So I think recipients can get a few things. One, it's the freedom and privilege to work on something innovative, but knowing that if this does turn out well, it can get funded further by other Air Force dollars to build larger weapon systems, more investment on the technology, and so it can really turn into a huge project for the Air Force. If we find out and learn something and it doesn't turn out as we expected, we just learn a lot about how it feels to manage your own experimentation project and learn along the way. And as part of the Edison Grant, we had to identify senior military members to mentor us and coach us along the way. So we start our networking and building relationships for other technical and engineering scientists within the Air Force.
Similarly is Project ARC, a program that sends scientists and engineers across 13 bases in 9 states, where they use their skills to promote innovation and enhance military proficiency.
The job that I'm currently in now came directly from being in Project ARC.
This is Space Force Guardian Master Sergeant Vince Olshavy.
I work here at Air Force Research Labs Center for Rapid Innovation, CRI. I am a uniformed scientist and or engineer. Background is in communications, so currently a 5 Charlie, but currently working in the innovation space here for AFRL.
Also joining FYSA is Lieutenant Kevin Tran, who is a space launch engineer focused on modeling and simulation, specifically at the National Space Intelligence Center.
Really, for my daily job, I focus on modeling and simulation for foreign space launch vehicle trajectories, where they're going, what their intended orbit is, and all the engineering that goes along with that. So
Tran, who was also a participant in Project ARC, says the experience was unlike any other.
So how'd you like it?
It was honestly the best opportunity I've ever had in being able to work for with innovation. Being able to not only network with people with diverse skill sets, but also being able to tackle a variety of different problems, big or small, has been awesome. And also the fact that I was, you know, located at Space Launch Delta 45, where they are really responsible for launching our spacecraft into space, really. So it's also being plugged into the Delta's initiatives in furthering them along into increasing their launch tempo as their years progress has been an awesome opportunity. So, and being able to do hands-on engineering, tinkering around with, you know, Arduinos and in-house prototyping, those experiences are exceptionally invaluable that I wouldn't really trade for anything else.
Project ARC started as a grassroots initiative inspired from a coffee shop discussion between a few airmen. The crux of the conversation was, what's my role in the fight and how can we better use our technical talents and education to serve our country? After a lot of hard work, volunteers, and I assume a lot more coffee, by 2020, the project was recognized and gained support by Air Force Chief Scientist Dr. Victoria Coleman and her office. That support led to funding that has helped Project ARC grow to 13 locations around the Department of the Air Force. Those locations were determined based on leadership support for change in infrastructure and facilities to support engineers on base. Olshavy says if you have the technical know-how and the desire to challenge yourself, then Project ARC is worth exploring.
I think maybe a couple years ago, I wouldn't have said yes to this. I wouldn't have put an application in, and it literally changed my life. The main requirements are that you do have a STEM degree, we would like that, and then also that you are an open thinker, you're able to communicate with others, you like working in the innovation space, and most of us are very comfortable at least jogging with scissors, although some of us like to run quite fast.
Project ARC is a newer program that is still establishing its timelines and schedules. So if you're an airman or guardian who is interested in a program like this, then keep your eyes open for emails that speak to you.
In their announcement, when they put the call out via email, the first line started like, give me your tinkerers, your thinkers, and that really spoke to me. In my basement, I have a full electronics workbench. I just like to fiddle around and build stuff. It never really comes to anything big, but it's just something to satisfy a mental need that I have. And when I saw that line, I thought, I've never seen anything quite like this. Come out from an official email. I believe it was a MyPERS message, you know, and so that kind of took me back. I went into the application process, read through the series of questions that they had. Every question they had was thought-provoking and really, really made you think about what you were going to put down. It led into a really interesting interview process where it was, they wanted to see you, they wanted you to be on camera so you could judge body language and hear responses. And I recently took part in the interview process for the iteration that's out now. So being on both the interviewee side and then becoming the interviewer was really, really interesting to kind of formulate questions because again, as I found out later, the questions that we were asked, there were a few targeted ones that everybody needed to be asked, but the others were kind of a little more, not freewheeling, but freeform. You know, if somebody gave you a little bit of information, you could pull a thread a little bit and see where it went. So really interesting.
From Project Tuskegee to Edison Grants and Project ARC, the Department of the Air Force has so many paths and destinations to pursue science, technology, engineering, and mathematics ambitions. There are literally jobs in robotics to rocket scientists and others.
Currently, a large part of my research portfolio is non-invasive brain stimulation.
This is Dr. Candace Hatcher Solis, an Air Force civilian whose work is focused on optimizing the performance of airmen and guardians.
I'm a research biological scientist working for the Department of the Air Force, for the Air Force Research Laboratory and the 711th Human Performance Wing.
Dr. Hatcher Solis plays a critical role for the Department of the Air Force, even if her daily uniform is a white lab coat and not an operational camouflage pattern uniform, or OCP. She explains further about what she does on a daily basis.
So we look at using electrical stimulation that modulates activity in the brain, and that can be used to enhance performance, to accelerate training, and promote fatigue resistance. I'm lucky in that my research spans all the way from fundamental science. So I study how we can enhance learning, memory, attention, and arousal, starting with effects on the brain at the molecular level, using animals and preclinical models, all the way up to testing devices and developing devices in the laboratory, and then transitioning those to field studies where we're able to take these technologies on location in an operational environment and see if it really helps airmen and guardians do their job.
Years before Hatcher Solis started her career in STEM with the Air Force, she was inspired by her father, who preceded her on a similar path.
And my father inspired me to pursue a STEM career. His degrees are in computer science, and he worked for the Air Force for over 30 years. He would take me with him into work on the weekends. He would take me with him to STEM outreach events, and he provided me with opportunities to cultivate and nurture my love of science.
Hatcher Solis loved science as a subject growing up and often participated in science fairs, spent many a Saturday morning watching Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and always knew she would strive for a career in STEM, which led her to pursue a PhD at Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine in Physiology and Biophysics. She could have worked anywhere, but she chose to work somewhere where the mission was special.
I love the fact that research that I'm doing in the lab could fix a near-term problem. Technology that I'm developing and working on could transition to the field in a few years. Several members of my family are in the military. My grandfather was a Korean War veteran. I have uncles that were in the Navy and several cousins that were in the Army. And I'm really passionate about research that promotes safety for the warfighter.
Dr. Candace Hatcher Solis didn't solely choose the Air Force because of patriotism and family ties. She also made the decision based on a calculated formula that included financial income, career progression, and quality of work-life balance.
The pay is very competitive. Working for the Department of the Air Force. And so while many of my peers were on their second or third postdoctoral fellowship, I was able to move into a permanent research position and run a research laboratory. I also enjoy the flexible working options. So when I started working in the Department of the Air Force, I was a new mom. My oldest son was one. And so it was really important to me to have the possibility to telework when I needed to, and a flexible schedule so I could stay full-time as an employee, but have every other Friday off so I could schedule his medical appointments when he was sick after he started daycare. Also, paid parental leave was really important to me. So having 3 months of paid parental leave to be at home with my son, I just had another child about a year ago. It was really nice to be able to stay at home with him and have that time with him before returning to work. And everybody was completely understanding.
Just recently, the Air Force Research Laboratory honored 17 scientists and engineers for outstanding career accomplishments. Dr. Hatcher Solis was one of the recipients.
It meant a lot for me to receive that award. I was very humbled, and I consider my accomplishments not only be my own, but a testament to the great team that I have working with me and the people that have helped me throughout my career. It also meant a lot to me that there haven't been many Black females that have won that early career award. And after I received that award, I had so many women come up to me and say, it meant a lot to me to see you up there. And I hope we see more women up there. And I hope to be a part of that process to help more women be on that stage and achieve that level of success.
The scientist, who used to be president of Air Force Women in Science and Engineering, also received a Fellows Award. This award allotted her the opportunity to work with her leadership and share ideas of how more women can get involved in these award programs. This freedom to express her opinions to leadership was important to her because she knows there is genuine value in representation, something that she didn't see much of growing up as a Black female interested in science.
In my science classes, I enjoyed learning about science, but a lot of the scientists that were highlighted didn't look like me. And so I always wanted to provide that opportunity for someone else. I am actively involved in mentoring. I have affiliate faculty positions at our local university, Wright State University. I always take summer interns and I have graduate students. I want people to see that this is what a scientist looks like in the Air Force. I want people to know that there are resources for women to be successful as scientists. You don't have to choose between your career and your family. I want them to know that underrepresented minorities work in the Air Force, they're successful, and that they have great contributions to make.
On the Air Force's official website's diversity page, it talks about how our country's diversity is one of our greatest strengths. It says there is no other country in the world so widely diverse, yet so deeply committed to being unified as the United States of America. Our guest, Dr. Candace Hatcher-Solis, explains further about the importance of diversity of thought and perspective in the STEM field and in the Air Force.
So if you look at the demographics for the United States, we are becoming more and more diverse with each generation. And so there will be so much untapped talent if we are sticking to certain demographics and excluding other groups and not making sure that we're investing in their education and their development, because those are the leaders that we're trying to grow for tomorrow, or as you mentioned, 2030. And so it's really important to me to make sure that I can do what I can through outreach to make sure that we're providing access to all types of different students. Maybe students that haven't been exposed to a lot of STEM or are in schools that don't have all the resources to perform the experiments and do the things we can do here at AFRL, just to cultivate that interest. Because you never know who's going to provide that needed breakthrough or give us the competitive advantage in the future.
This has been For Your Situational Awareness. For the Defense Media Activity Air Force Production, I'm Angel Orozco. Thank you for listening to FYSA, an Air Force podcast, Bridging the Science Gap. Thanks to all of our guests and to everyone who helped with production of this episode. I'll see you next time.